The Extraordinary Ordinary is brought to you in partnership with Coca-Cola Euro-Pacific Partners. Hello and welcome to The Extraordinary Ordinary, the podcast from Women of the Year, which recognises and celebrates the achievements of remarkable women you've probably never heard of, but whose passion, dedication, hard work and fierce determination have changed society, lives and the world in all kinds of inspiring ways. Our guest today is Gillian Mullane, a mother whose life was forever changed by a heartbreaking event that captured the world's attention. In December 2018, a young woman named Grace was travelling in New Zealand. What was meant to be an exciting adventure for the bubbly 21-year-old turned into a nightmare that no family should ever have to go through. On the eve of her 22nd birthday, Grace went on a date with a man she'd met online in Auckland, and during that date, he murdered her. He was charged on the 8th of December 2018, but during the subsequent trial used a harrowing defence argument, the so-called rough sex defence. He was jailed for life. Gillian has since become an advocate for justice, raising awareness about the importance of respecting and protecting the rights and safety of individuals, especially when they're far from home. She's here to share her story of turning pain into purpose, seeking justice, and ensuring that Grace's legacy lives on. Thank you for joining us today, Gillian.
Thank you for inviting me.
No, such a pleasure. Well, first of all, can you just tell us how amazing Grace was?
Oh, she was amazing, yeah. She was like my best friend. We used to do so much together. She lit up a room with a smile. She was family orientated, loved her two brothers and her little niece. She just was a joy, you know. I mean, she was also a teenager at times, but from a very, very early age, she wanted to travel. And New Zealand was one of the places that from 11, she wrote about it and she wanted to, speak about it. She just was an absolute joy, you know, like everybody's daughter. They bring joy.
Absolutely. Well, she just sounds absolutely incredible. That excitement that she must have had going off to New Zealand. But what we want to do in this podcast is not to talk about the man who murdered her. You don't mention his name, do you? That's really important to you.
No, we never mentioned his name. Why do I want to give him any airtime at all? I don't think about him. I don't care. I don't care what happens to him. You know, he come into our life and destroyed our family. I don't want to know his name. I don't care about his name. I don't care about him.
No, it's just giving oxygen to him. And I think what we want to do is concentrate on Grace, but also make this interview about her legacy and the work, the tireless, amazing work that you've done since 2018. And you've been really incredible, Gillian, because also I think it's really important to note that at the time that Grace went missing, you were actually undergoing treatment for breast cancer, weren't you?
Yes, the week before I'd had breast surgery, less than a week later, Grace was taken from us. So I hadn't even had my dressings changed or anything like that. So, yeah, I don't really remember an awful lot about that because it was all just my friends and family sort of just dragging me to the hospital, making sure I was going because my husband David had to go to New Zealand and deal with that. But your mind is quite good at selecting and putting things somewhere else. So I don't really, it's all a bit of a blur really that time.
So your husband David was out there during the search for Grace and then the subsequent discovery of what had happened to her. And then David, I think also just to really set the scene for listeners to see how strong you are and what you've been through, David actually got cancer, didn't he?
So when we went to the trial, which was the following December after Grace was taken from us, he was taken unwell while we was at the trial, but we just put it down to stress. We thought he had an ulcer, but unfortunately he had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. So that Christmas was another disastrous Christmas and New Year, and he was taken into hospital over Christmas. He started chemotherapy, but unfortunately it was too late. It had gone to his brain, and he died the November of that year.
So that's 17 months after Grace died, David also died. And
Gillian, did your friends and family just scoop you up and look after you?
Yeah, yeah. They're amazing, my family. And, you know, David's family and my family and my friends are just, I can't put into words. And people I don't even know. And even now I bump into people and the support they give me and the letters, and they just scoop me up. And, you know, because they were all hurting as much as we were, as I was, but they just sort of never showed me. Then I got help with victim support, which was a big turning point for me, because I'm talking to people that actually truly understand what I was going through. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't sound like I skipped through it, because I didn't. You know, there was times when I didn't want to be here. I pushed everybody away, you know, trying to find your path on this road of grief. It's a very, very difficult thing to do, very difficult.
And I'm sorry to have to ask you about that. I just really wanted to set the scene for listeners so that they could understand exactly what you'd gone through, and also that feeling, as you say, of sometimes not wanting to carry on and how you actually do that.
I did contemplate suicide. Not, you know, I was just such in a dark, lonely, lonely place that I couldn't see any way out of it. But the chink of light just comes and you think, I can't bring any more sadness onto my family. They've had enough. You're sort of in a black hole, the best way I can describe it. You know, all of a sudden, this chink of light, and it's like the tiniest little pinprick, but it's a little bit of hope. And you also get to a point where you realise that you're the only one that can get you out of there. But it is that chink of light. And, you know, I can probably say that my toes are probably always in the darkness, and sometimes my feet, and sometimes, you know, my waist, but my head is probably more in the sun now. But it's taken me, you know, a long time to get there, and an awful lot of counselling and an awful lot of help.
Thank you, Gillian, for telling us that. And I think it's a really helpful descriptor, just that descriptor of the toes being in the darkness, but your head staying in the light. Can you tell us what was that first pinprick of light? Can you remember what that would have been?
I think when David actually passed, I did realise that I can't stay there, because I've got two boys that have now, you know, at one point they lost both parents, but I was still here and David Lee physically wasn't here. So I think probably really the turning point was we had a big memorial do for David, because we were in COVID when he died, so we could only have 30 people. And we had a memorial party the following August after he died in the November. And when everybody come together, and a friend sort of just made me dance, I just remember looking at everybody thinking, oh, I don't know if this is the right thing I should be doing. And then I just looked and everybody just smiled. And then my sister-in-law went, it was just the right thing to do. And then from there, I just slowly started coming out of the darkness and pushing myself to go places and to speak to people, you know.
Gillian, you are incredible. So let's talk about the work that you've done for Grace. So since you made those moves on the dance floor and then yeah. started looking towards the light, can you tell us then, what was the first thing that you started to think about doing for Grace's memory?
So from the word go, we always knew that there was something that we needed to do just to channel our grief. Obviously, with White Ribbon, we really support them, and they were a big support in New Zealand.
So for listeners, can you explain what White Ribbon is?
White Ribbon, they're a charity that basically educates and goes into the workplace, encouraging men to support women. And their motto is, never use or excuse, remain silent about men's violence against women. And it's really, really powerful. And they have a 16-day action, which starts on the 25th of November. And it's just supporting women, you know, and don't remain silent. When you hear about somebody not saying something quite nice or you know, worse, speak up. All the time it's brushed under a carpet. We're never going to get anywhere, you know. We've got to speak out.
Exactly. It's so important not to remain silent, as you say, as women, to use our voices, not remain silent.
Now, and men.
And men. You're right. And men. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And now White Ribbon works both in the UK and in New Zealand.
Oh, it's worldwide.
Okay. And can you tell us what they've done in New Zealand for Grace's legacy?
when Grace was taken from us, they had a vigil out there, and Mark Longley, who's the head of the New Zealand White Ribbon, done a speech about every woman that's taken out there. It's not as big here as it is in New Zealand, but I'm hoping to push it a little bit more, a little bit more.
Now, can you tell us about the Love Grace initiative?
Right, so Love Grace, that was my niece Hannah. We're sort of sitting around the kitchen table thinking, what can we do? What can we do? We need to do something with our hands and our brains and everything. So she come up with, you know, what does Grace like? Well, Grace was a girly. So she liked shoes, handbags, perfume, makeup, you know, everything. But I can't really do much with shoes, but we can do something with handbags. We can fill handbags. So Love Grace was sort of born around the table, and my sister-in-laws were there and my sister. And we decided that Love Grace is a handbag filled with essential items, shampoo, conditioner, toothpaste, deodorant, and shower gel. And then each bag is tied with a card. The design is a poppy, which Grace drew, and the handwriting is Grace's handwriting on the last birthday card she sent me. And it's tied with a white ribbon, because of white ribbon. And on the bottom of the card, it basically tells about Grace, what happened to her. And then on the bottom of it, it's believe in yourself as you matter. Our target to start with was 50 to 150 bags, and sort of just do a local women's refuge. Because with the domestic violence side of things, we're really passionate about helping people with that. We get so many letters from the ladies, so many letters and emails, and it's heart-wrenching, to be fair. We never expected that. And we've also now a total of 15,601 bags. So we've got now 47 drop-off points in England. We've got an Amazon wish list. We've run campaigns in New Zealand, Canada, Singapore, USA and Kenya.
Gillian, you are unbelievable. So this is something, I just want to reiterate this. So this is something that started around your kitchen table. So you were just sitting around at the kitchen table with your family talking about how you can honour Grace's legacy. And the idea came up to help women who were in women's refuges. So women seeking shelter from domestic violence and filling up handbags with things that they need. It's just beautiful that you've got the poppy that was designed by Grace with her handwriting and the message, believe in yourself, you matter.
Yeah.
So, and you've been getting letters from women just saying how important being thought
is. Yeah, definitely. You know, some of the women wasn't allowed to have a lipstick, a purse, never had a new bag, you know, perfume, absolutely heart-wrenching. And, you know, and they also, we have a lot of the ladies that sort of laminate the card and they just put them in the handbag. So when they're going to court, they've got that little bit of Grace and, you know, someone telling you you matter is a big thing, because, you know, if you're told that you don't matter, you're this, you're that, you start believing that you don't. That's wrong. That's just wrong.
Absolutely. That idea, if you're told that you're worthless, if someone counters that, and I love that idea that they're laminated and they're kept with them almost like a kind of a talisman, isn't it, that you can carry around with yourself.
Yeah.
So for people listening, you said you've got 47 drop-offs and a wish list. How can we help?
We've got a webpage, and just if you just Google Love Grace, that will come straight up. There's 47 drop-off points sort of from down in sort of Devon up to Scotland, in Ireland and surrounding, you know, up the country. We got the Amazon wish list, because that was quite a good thing for people that can't get to the drop-off points. We get local churches, women's WIs, individuals that do a handbag party, for want for a better word, but get together. And then Hannah, my niece, she then finds the local refuge to where they are, and they get to drop off, and we send the cards so that they're all off. Yeah, so
it's just incredible.
It's a network of women helping women. And what also is a lovely thing that we find is that when the women have received a bag, a lot of them will return the favour and fill the bag up and then take that to a drop-off point. So then they are sending their message as well, you know. But it's amazing what we have been donated.
Well, what's also amazing, and I think that's what you said, it's that network of women supporting women. So it's not just the fact that these women and refugees are getting the physical bag filled with these physical things. It's more about the fact that you said that network, that idea that they are being supported. There's this invisible network of women supporting one another and then paying that forward. So filling up another bag and giving that off to a drop-off point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, correct. Yeah. This is something that it was just really for our grief. We've got this great big table that we all sort of stand there and we clean the bags and, you know, woe betide anybody says they're going away for the weekend, because we go, where'd you go in? Right, okay, we'll see if there's a refuge there. You can take 10 bags there, can't you? You know, one of my sister-in-laws, I think she's even taken them, like, she's gone abroad, and like, we've gone, where are you going? Can we sort this out, you know?
So tell us again how many countries it's in.
So the countries are obviously the UK, New Zealand. So the UK is ongoing. That just never stops. New Zealand is an annual sort of thing. So they usually do the appeal round about Valentine's Day, February sort of time, because of the love grace. I think that's what the connection is. Canada, we've done Singapore, Kenya, and the USA.
You are amazing, Gillian. And not only that, you're not only filling handbags, sorting things out, you also climbed Mount Kilimanjaro, didn't you?
I did.
Can you tell? Because at the beginning, obviously, you said, you know, obviously, you know, Grace went missing in December 2018. Then by the next year, you were dealing with David. So you said that you had, you know, a really run of awful Christmases and New Year's, but you had one New Year on the top of Killy. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so the Christmas, New Year after David went, I remember sitting there with a friend and we were just talking, and I just thought, she was doing her best, bless her. And I just thought, I can't sit here and do this anymore. And I've got to change what I'm doing. You know, sitting there having a bottle of champagne is lovely, but it's not what I needed. So I decided that I'd look for something to do. And I thought, well, holiday, I'm just going to lay there and think about everything. And I thought, I need a doing holiday. And I do treks anyway. So I looked on the internet and found, well, Kilimanjaro goes out on Boxing Day. I thought, that ticks my boxes. So I don't, you know, I can do Christmas Day with my boys. And then I'm away for New Year. That gets the Christmas period out of the way. I don't have to deal with it. And then I persuaded my brother-in-law, Martin, and my sister-in-law, Heather, to come, and my dear friend, Jason. So the four of us, we set off on Boxing Day to climb Kilimanjaro. We done a Just Giving page, but didn't sort of push it because it was my journey. I wanted to do it. But we raised $33,000 for the White Ribbon and two other charities, which was amazing. But at the top, I put some stones, and I put a stone up there with Grace's name on it and David's name so that they travel with me. Not that either of them would have gone up Kilimanjaro, I have to say. They would have been down the bottom with the gin and tonics. And also, I've got to know two lovely ladies whose daughters were murdered. And so Amelia Blake was murdered in Australia the same year as Grace, and her mum has come a very, very dear friend to mine. So Amelia come with me, and Emily Longley, who was she's a New Zealander who was murdered over here in 2013, and her mum really helped me, and we keep in contact. So I decided Emily needed to come as well. So the four of them are up at the top of Kilimanjaro, unless somebody's decided to move them, but it doesn't matter because they're just traveling. They're still moving on.
And was it actually on New Year's Day that you reached the top and put the pebbles down?
Yeah. So as we left just as the fireworks were all going off in Moshi. But what I can remember looking down thinking, they just looked like somebody striking a match, that we were that high up. And then we started walking, and because obviously it's pitch black, which is probably a good thing, really, because you don't really want to know where you're walking. And then we were sort of halfway up the mountain when the sun come up, which was quite special. And then we got to the top, and very emotional. We did it. We got there and I got my photograph right at the top there. And yeah, coming down, whole new ball game.
I suppose because you're not thinking about the way down, are you? Just thinking about being up at the top. And as you say, you've had this incredible emotional moment up there with the sun coming up, the fireworks over Moshi, the pebbles, you know, remembering everyone. And then to then have to turn around and come down again.
Yeah, and my poor toenails really did suffer.
Oh, Gillian. And, you know, just mentioning the other women there, the other names, it really does speak to the fact that there is still this amount of male violence towards women. And it just seems to be ongoing, doesn't it? What can we do to help?
Well, I think never remain silent. The promise is with the White Ribbon is never use it, excuse or remain silent about men's violence against women. In a sentence, isn't it, really? And both those girls, as Grace, they were the subject of the rough sex defence as well. You know, it was deemed as it more or less their fault. You know, certainly with Grace, Amelia was slightly different and Emily was slightly different, but it was portrayed in, you know, the media and the press, and it's wrong. You know, rough sex.
It's so disgusting that defence that happened, that you had to go through that. And it's a form of victim blaming, isn't it?
Oh, 100%. Again, I didn't know anything about any of this when Grace was taken. But I was just thinking it's a straightforward case. You know, how could you even, you know, she was a fun-loving 21-year-old, you know, just left uni. You know, what could you possibly find, you know? Oh, no, I was rudely awakened quite swiftly. It basically claims that sex gone wrong. It's rough sex defence. To kill or violent injury women or girls, you know, at least 60 UK women have been killed. This normalising violence against women in sex.
So repeat that statistic, Gillian. So 60 women in the UK.
60 UK women, because Grace wasn't in the UK.
Yes, yes.
Killed. It's just normalising violence against women.
Using that defence?
Yes.
That's absolutely shocking, isn't it? And it, as you say, it's a rude awakening. So can you tell us about the charity We Can't Consent to This?
So We Can't Consent to This is an amazing organisation. Yeah, so We Can't Consent started looking into it and realised that this was a defence. And men were basically getting away with murder, really, because they were saying, oh, no, no, she wanted to be strangled. Oh, no, no, she wanted that. Well, if you can't answer, there's two people in a room, and one comes out and the other one doesn't. How can you answer that? How can anybody answer that? So in Grace's case, which I can talk about, his defence was that Grace asked for to be strangled, and but I know an awful lot more than I should know about strangulation, I'm afraid, that you can stop. And I think we need to call what it really is. It's murder. It's plain and simple. Plain and simple.
Exactly. Absolutely. It's murder and it's victim blaming. It's just absolutely shocking to have to go through that and to have to sit in court. And so for David, your husband, and you during the trial, just listening to that.
Horrendous. Again, you sort of go in auto mode because you know that you can't say nothing. You can't give them a look. You can't do anything. You know, you just have to sit there and listen. And they're annihilating your daughter. But this is like every court case, you know. But the good thing is that we've helped with We Can't Consent to This, that England and Wales, that defence does not exist no more. Unfortunately, Scotland and Ireland still does, and the rest of the world, which is maddening, isn't it? It's mad.
There are no words, really, actually, that the fact that still exists as a legitimate defence. But you've been part of changing that law in England and Wales.
Yeah, because Grace's case was quite a high profile. We supported Fiona and, you know, We Can't Consent to This. Who used Grace's name and, you know, so, yeah, we're 100% support to stop this, because it's actually just mad that it's still going on.
Can you tell us now about your future projects?
Right, my future projects, yes. I'm going to do Base Camp Everest next year, next September. My brother-in-law and my sister-in-law are cabin. And then I've got a few other friends that have said they want to do this. But it's not as high as Killy, so.
You're going to be bringing Grace and David in their pebbles?
Oh, yes, definitely. They go everywhere. Every holiday I go on there. But yeah, especially on somewhere like that, they get put up there. They'd be at Everest. As I say, neither of them would ever do that. But
yeah, you can raise a glass to them.
Oh, I certainly will.
Yeah. And so for people listening, can you just tell us how exactly we can help? So how can we find your Amazon wish list to help fill the handbags?
So if you go on to the Love Grace webpage, got a map to show you where the donation parts are. The Amazon wish list is there as well. We worked quite closely with a refuge to sort of work out what they truly want. And we got Facebook, got email. So we got lovegraceuk@gmail.com. And we've got Instagram. If you go on to any of those platforms, you can click on it, will show you who Grace was, what we do, and how you can get involved if you want to.
Fantastic. And I'll put the links to those in the show notes so people can click on the links.
Lovely.
And
thank you.
Go on that. No, well, no, and go on the Amazon wish list, and also links to Love Grace and the White Ribbon charity as well. Now, what we always do, Gillian, on this podcast is we're going to ask you some 4 quick fire questions. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. So first of all, who is or are the woman or women who have inspired you?
That's quite an easy one. That's my nan, my mum and my big sister. They've always been there to support me.
And what one piece of advice would you give your younger self?
Be confident. Don't fret about the small stuff and just believe in yourself.
And what's the one thing you can't live without?
Probably the support and love from my family and friends.
And what's the one thing about you that would surprise people?
I can tap dance.
Can you? Please, will you tap dance on Mount Everest?
Oh, I might do a shuffleboard change up there for you, and I'll record it.
Yeah, video that, and we'll look at it on your Instagram. Oh, Gillian, you're amazing. And I think I just wanted to ask you one other question, which was, for people listening who might still be in the darkness, you know, who might be more than waist high in the darkness, what would you say to them?
Oh, that's a difficult one. I'll just say, be kind to yourself, which I still don't quite do that. But yeah, be kind to yourself. And I think just if you get out of bed and you get a shower, count that as a win. You know, if you can walk the dog or you can walk down the road, count that as a win. Don't give yourself too much pressure. Just look after yourself and be kind to yourself, I think. And you know, that chink of light will get brighter. And your life does change. And my life has changed completely. But I've got a family that need me and I need to be there with them.
Oh, Gillian, thank you so much. Your strength and resilience really do serve as a massive inspiration to us all. So thank you for your time today. And I think I just want to finish off by saying, here's to Grace.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Absolute honour. Thank you.
If you have enjoyed this podcast, please rate and review as it helps people to find us. To find out more about Women of the Year, go to womenoftheyear.co.uk. This episode was presented by me, Jo Baring, and produced by Claire Lynch. The Extraordinary Ordinary is brought to you in partnership with Coca-Cola Euro-Pacific Partners. They're one of the leading consumer goods companies in the world, making, moving, and selling some of the world's most loved brands. CCEP make, employ, manufacture, and distribute locally, maintaining a strong commitment to their communities. CCEP's success depends on their people. They want CCEP to be a great place to work, where people can grow, be happy, and be well in a safe, open, diverse, and inclusive workplace.